Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening today, thanks for making us a part of your day. Well, it's another week in the books with the stock market, you know, being choppy and back and forth and back and forth. And it's kind of what we expected going into this election season. And if you expected something different, I don't know what you've been watching, because, you know, every year that we have an election, it seems we do get, you know, news-driven movement in the stock market, and it goes up and it goes down. And not to start the show off with just ugliness, because today, later on today, Steve Anderson, the property tax guru, is coming in to talk to you about some property tax issues, how to combat your property tax if you feel like it's too strong, how to go to bat, and he and his team go to bat for you to get your property taxes lowered. So I know we've been talking about having him on here for a couple of weeks. But before we get him coming in, I wanted to just spend a few minutes here talking about the market and the questions that I've been getting overall when you talk about what's going to happen as we go into an election, what's going to happen if one, you know, candidate gets elected or the other one does. And anybody who tells you they know is either lying or they're confused, right? Because they don't know. We really don't know what's going to happen. But I go back to being cautiously optimistic and cautiously bullish of the market overall once we have some certainty. Now, there's, you know, do both candidates have, you know, flaws in terms of their plans? Yes. Do they both have good ideas in terms of their plans? Yes. And nobody is perfect. When you start talking about, you know, having a candidate or a presidential candidate, you're not going to have a perfect person for the market or perfect policy for the market. But what the stock market does like is certainty. What it doesn't like is all this uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know. You can see, as you know, anytime any politician talks about stimulus or about the coronavirus or about Supreme Court nominations or about the election or whatever, they come on CNBC or Fox Business or any of those big, you know, outlets, or they put something out on Market Watch, it makes the market move because people put too much stock in what politicians say. And really, it gets back to, you need to have a plan, and that long-term plan needs to line up with your investments. Now, when you're looking at your investments and you look and say, well, the stock market's back near all-time highs, it even touched, you know, a new all-time high back in September. Why isn't my account at all-time highs? Or I'm looking at the market and it's, you know, it did this and it did that, and my account isn't following along with that what the market's doing. If you're invested in an index fund or an ETF that tracks the market, you can reasonably expect that your account will move like the market. If you are not invested in an ETF that tracks the S&P 500, you will not move like the S&P 500. So you need to not, you know, take away, you know, get away from comparing your account or your portfolio to the market and compare it to your long-term goals. Are you going to be able to afford to live in retirement? Are you going to be able to afford to have an income coming in to pay for those basic needs, you know, a place to live, food, you know, your basic bills, your utilities, plus have some fun money and some wiggle room, because there are expenses that come up in retirement that you may or may not be planning on. So rather than focus on what the overall market is doing and comparing your investments to the overall market, or comparing one investment over here with this investment firm with this investment firm over here and really comparing apples to oranges, you need to compare your performance, your market performance, your portfolio, how it's doing, to your long-term goals. Because if you're in a low-risk portfolio that maybe hasn't climbed all the way back yet, then that's a good thing, because if you had climbed all the way back, you probably took too much risk. And if you're in a high risk portfolio, you're probably doing pretty well. You had a rough time, a rough go there in March and February, but since then you've done quite well. So, you know, I would give yourself credit. Stop comparing yourself to the overall market and start comparing yourself to your plan and your goals and what you need. And use this time as a time to analyze, am I taking too much risk or am I taking too little risk? Now, reasonably thinking, I wouldn't, you know, suggest making any big changes as we head into the election, because again, we don't know what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks. But by the same token, you can use this experience over the last year, this sort of lost year, as it were, in terms of the market, to say, okay, maybe I had too much risk. Maybe my risk tolerance isn't as high as I thought it was, or vice versa. Maybe my risk tolerance should be higher. Because interestingly enough, if you rode the market down, then you rode it all the way back up, you'd be in a better place than if you sold at the bottom. Or if you rode it down but got out of the way and so maybe haven't bought back in because it snapped back so fast. The point is, folks, when you're looking at your overall portfolio, make decisions based on your plan, on your long-term goals, and make decisions based on your risk. Don't make decisions based on what the overall market is doing, because again, unless you own the 500 companies in the S&P 500 in the same portion that the index tracks them, then you're not going to do the same as the S&P 500. So don't worry about comparing yourself to that as what we call a benchmark. Worry about comparing yourself to your long-term plan. Am I able to get there? Am I in the right lane? Am I driving the right speed? And maybe you're not. In which case, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. If you'd like to have myself, Matt, my team review your situation, make sure it matches up with your risk and your long-term goals. All right, that's my soapbox here for this morning. We talked about it last week. We've talked about it the last couple of weeks. Take the politics out of your portfolio. Focus on your plan and worry about what's going to get you to your best living situation in retirement, or your long-term goals if retirement is not one of them. If you are one of those who wants to keep on working forever, then good for you. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break here. And when I come back, Steve Anderson is going to be here. He is the property tax guru that we bring in to talk every time in property tax, you know, time frame as we get close to when we have to all pay that wonderful property tax if you're a property owner. So stay tuned as we're going to go over some situations that he's dealt with, some ways to check and see if you are paying too much on your property tax, and maybe how he and his office can help you out. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Bo Caldwell, CFP, here in studio with Steve Anderson at First Class Property Tax Appeals. And we've been talking a little bit, Steve, about, you know, ways to figure out if your property tax needs to be appealed, kind of ways to look out for it. But I think people would really enjoy hearing some, you know, some of the times, you know, that you've won, some of the cases that you've won in different areas around here. Hey, this is how we found it. This is the difference. You talked about the Yamhill County property where they were improvements that were applied for, but that actually weren't finished, or, you know, they just hadn't come back out and looked at. But, you know, I'm sure you have other situations that weren't necessarily that cut and dry.
We have a situation in Clackamas County. It's a neighborhood. And in fact, I even told my counterparts at Clackamas County around the first of the year, you guys got a problem here. And sure. I think we filed 15 or 16 cases in state tax court on that particular neighborhood, and we've won every one of them so far. We're down to like three or four left now.
Wow.
And literally, I can walk door to door to these properties. And I see that a lot because in Oregon, what happens is the assessors rely on market district valuations. And so there's like 308 market districts in Multnomah County, 286 in Clackamas County. And what they do is they put a global number on that one market district. Well, if the district's wrong, the numbers are wrong, or the sales information going is wrong, then you got the whole market district being incorrect. And this situation here, typically the houses were around $1 million. I shouldn't say that. The county had $1 million on them.
Right, right.
And I think I shared one with you that $1.4 million on it, and actually the value was $725,000. That was like half of what they had on there.
Wow.
So, and once again, this is a situation where these are bigger homes, mm-hmm. 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 square foot homes, which are not desirable anymore, realistically, in this marketplace, at a price point that wasn't desirable.
Sure.
And we had several of them. I think we mailed like 40 or 45 letters into this neighborhood, and we got, like I said, 15, about a third of them were our clients. And literally, I think we've now 11 or 12 of them we settled with the counties already. The other problem I have this year is that because of COVID, step one in the process is the county wants to go out and do a physical inspection. Well, they're not allowing their people to go out and do inspections because of COVID. So now they're relying on me to go out my little camera, my little trusty little brownie, you know, or Polaroid, if you will. And take photos. And which I think is kind of interesting because, I mean, I could go out and take pictures of an outhouse and send it to them. There's your house. You know, well, they wouldn't believe that. But I'm just saying that there's no transparency there.
Yeah.
And so they're making decisions based off my photography, which is not that good, by the way.
Right. Yeah. You know, you weren't a photography major.
Well, when I'm taking pictures of my clients' houses and sending them to the county, believe me, there's a lot of darkness involved.
Yeah. You know, right. Yeah.
I want to make it look as negative as possible. But that being said, we see that a lot. We see neighborhoods, we see in condo projects, we see condo buildings themselves that are wrong, and they're globally wrong.
Right.
And so what happens is you go in there and try to expose that information to the people living there, and hopefully they'll take advantage of it. And we see that in Oregon and Washington, in Clark County, we see a lot of problems with land values over here. We just talked about land values in the last segment.
Yeah.
They've gotten very aggressive over there on land values. In fact, the board over there, the Board of Equalization, told me last year, hey, look at land values. They told me that. They said,
right.
This is a marketing tip for you, Steve. Go look at market. Go look at land values. Like, okay, I'm going to do that. And so that's what we're doing. And we're doing a lot of land. I've got one 9-lot subdivision on the river in Clark County where we have 7 of the homeowners under contract. And according to Clark County Assessor, the land values in their neighborhood is $2.3 million per acre.
Wow.
Think about that for a minute, okay?
Yeah.
$2.3 million per acre. That's a lot of money.
That seems like a ton of money.
The market's about half that, by the way, just so you know.
Oh, sure. Okay.
All right.
That's a significant savings, conceivably, in property taxes.
They'll be getting nice checks over there. And I've done a lot of work in the neighborhood before, anyway. They've been wrong. Like, as I said before, I see this a lot where you and I talked before the show about the fact that the assessors tend to sometimes change things to correct them, if you will, mistakes, if you will. Other times, they just leave it the way it is because it's the golden goose paying them, and they don't want to change it because it's going to affect their revenue stream.
Right. Well, you know, if nobody's challenging it, they're not going to, you know, and I think that goes without saying, the county, the state government, if they're taking in too much money, they're not going to come in and tell you that if you tell them, oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, we were taking too much money.
Yeah.
Here's your
even Oregon, you don't get a refund. Okay. If they pay you money, you don't get a refund. You get a return on the overpayment you make. And you silly taxpayer, you just pay us too much money.
Right.
That's exactly what they say, honest to God.
Right.
It's an overpayment.
Yeah, so it's not a refund. You paid us too much money.
Yeah.
It's our fault. It's not their fault.
Yeah.
Which seems crazy. Yeah, you were mentioning there was a couple of buildings in condo buildings in Northwest Portland that, you know, you've had some really good success with.
I think we filed in 12 different condo projects last year in downtown Portland. And you and I are talking off the air about the fact that I've been doing this now for 10 years. And historically, they go in, the county goes in and makes adjustments based upon the units that I appeal. Last year, or 2 years ago, I should say, they actually made a whole building adjustment on Northwest Davis, which just shocked me. They always talk about it, never did it. And then this last year, they actually adjusted two total buildings. So if you live in the Edge Lofts or the Henry, you can thank us because your neighbors and our company were successful in those two buildings, and the county actually went in, lowered property values, lowered taxes in those two buildings. Now, I want to preface that with, okay, I've been getting a lot of phone calls about COVID, okay?
Sure.
And also the riots in downtown Portland. I shouldn't say the activity. It's not riots, you know. Yeah. Depending on who you talk to and what's going on.
Yeah, the activity. Yeah, sure.
But that all started around the 1st of May. As I told you in the last segment, the valuation on your property is on January 1st.
Sure.
So that will show up in next year's bill, not this year's bill.
Oh, okay.
And I'm getting phone calls right now. I mean, literally every day. Valid concerns. I bought a unit in the Pearl, paid $1 million for it. I bought it so I could walk to shopping and walk to dining, okay? I can't do either right now.
Right.
In fact, I'm walking over people trying to get to, you know, out of here. And I can't get any, I'm not even look at my unit. I want to sell it. I can't, no one even go downtown Portland and even look at a unit. I understand that. Okay. I totally understand that. But the problem is I can't apply that mechanism until next year's tax bill.
Okay.
Not this year's tax bill.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. That clarifies kind of what we talked about in the last segment is even if the market has gone down over the last 6, 8, 10 months, you can't challenge that portion of it. It's based the like you said, the real market value. That's the
correct
term, right?
Correct.
The real market value is based off of the January real market value,
right,
not off of,
right,
you know, where it is right currently.
Right. And I used to be a hearings officer in Clackamas County. That's where I got my training from, if you will. And that was the frustrating part to me, was that people come in the following March or February, 14, 15 months after the assessment date, and say, I've got a neighbor just got to sell pending or just close their house that has absolutely no bearing on your value 12 months or 14 months ago. We can't look at it. We can look at it next year. We can't look at it this year. And people get frustrated and walk out the door. And unfortunately, as once again, this opaque system in Oregon, they always assume that the taxpayer knows everything about the system.
Right.
Come on, you don't. And my biggest beef with the assessors is that when you get your tax statement, it comes in the mail, show me on there where it says how many bedrooms and baths you have, how many square footage you have, what the lot size is, okay, what the quality of the house is, what number they assigned it for a class or quality. They don't. It's not on there, okay? You have to go dig and find the information that they have.
Right.
And but you should know everything about the property. Well, hey, wait a minute. You don't give it to me. You know, I have to go find it somewhere else.
Well, and in the case you mentioned before, I mean, I know everything about the actual property, but I don't know everything about the information they have on the property. Maybe there was something filed, or maybe, you bought a house that was, bought and sold 2 years, 3 years before that had maybe remodeling done and you didn't know, same sort of thing we talked about.
Let me throw a boomerang at you, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Just so you don't know this, in Oregon, every tax account has a data sheet on it. Okay, it's called different things in different counties. It's called a Proval in Clackamas County. It's called a CHAR or Assessor's Characteristics Card in Multnomah County. It's called a Roll Report Card in Washington County. Okay, it is public information. You can go down and get a copy of your property or anybody else's, by the way. You got to pay a printing charge. It's $1 in Washington County, 50 cents in Clackamas County, it's $2 in Multnomah County. They have more expensive paper in Multnomah County.
Yeah, I don't know. They have more expensive everything in Multnomah County.
But you can get yours or your neighbors or your sisters or your ex-wives if you want to, if you want to get really, belligerent and that kind of stuff. No, you can get anybody as you want as long as you're willing to pay for it. And it has everything that the assessor knows about that property or doesn't know about the property on that piece of paper. Okay, it's actually 2 pages is what it is. So if you're going to appeal your taxes, I would strongly recommend, we do this all the time, strongly recommend you get a copy of that because that way you know what they're looking at and what they're dealing with.
Okay, and where do people, just go down to the
assessor's office?
The assessor's office?
And when you go in there, here's what's going to happen. They're going to want to interpret it for you. They don't want to give it to you. Pay them the money. And by the way, ask for the tax account number, not the street address. Give them the tax account number. Here's my $2. Give me the printout, okay? And they're going to ask what you want it for. It's none of their business, okay?
Right.
So we do that religiously because that way we know what they're working with.
Right. Well, you can't go to bat without knowing exactly. So that kind of leads me, it's a good segue into, because people have asked, when people work with you and your team, how does that work from a client standpoint in terms of how do you guys get paid? What's the process for?
Well, thank you. Thanks for asking that question. I love how I get paid. No, I'm just, Here's what we do. For free, we review your tax statement. So typically, if you email or call us and say, I recently bought a home, or I'm just interested in finding out what my tax situation is on this property, and we'll take a look at it and then get back to you a recommendation based upon what we find. And it can be based on either comparable sales. If you have an appraisal on the property, we want to take a look at that. If you just purchased a property, we'll look at the sale there. We can access that information. And then we'll come back with a recommendation based on that information. If you decide you want to go forward and you want to appeal, we actually would send two forms out to you. One authorizes us to take your place through the whole process. The other one is our letter of engagement. Basically, we get hired at that point in time. If you're in Multnomah County, $30 filing fee with the county. Washington and Clackamas County don't charge a filing fee right now. So, and then we charge $350 up front, administrative fees, what we charge to file everything. We actually file all the paperwork in a timely manner before the filing deadline. We gather all the evidence and submit it. Okay. If there is an inspection right now, I say if, because typically there used to be, but right now we don't know. We would coordinate that with your calendar, and we'd actually attend it on your behalf. You don't need to be there. Just look, just access the property. We meet the county there and go through really about 30-minute inspection is what it is. And then we schedule the hearing date and time and actually testify on your behalf. So basically, once you sign the paperwork and send us a check, you're out of it until it's done.
Right.
You can attend and, you know, see the stuff you want to, but most of my clients, I think I've had two clients over 1,000 cases, I've had two clients actually attend a hearing. So, and when we have a hearing, they're like, they walk out in the hallway, what was that? What did you guys talk? Because we're talking in our lingo, myself and the assessors are, and the board too. And we're doing RMVs and MAVs and stuff like that. And the taxpayer's going, what'd you guys, it's Greek to me. And I go, well, that's why we're here. That's why we do this.
That's why they have
But yeah. And then the other part of our process is that if you get a check for, say, $1,000 refund, we charge 20% of the fee as our fee. So on the back end. So it's $350 plus 20% is our fee. $30 filing fee in Multnomah County right now is the rule locally.
Well, that sounds more than reasonable. You're incentivized, right? It's similar to you. The more you can save the taxpayer, the more you guys make. So it seems to me like it's a win-win, right? So in my experience, and we've talked about this before, you're not going to say yes, we should go forward with this, because you're not really making any money on the $350. Because people ask that the $350 is to cover the cost of just doing the filing.
That's a break even.
Yeah.
Time I put a person out on your property and file it. And send it, and we literally hand deliver the filings, okay, at the county. We don't mail them, okay? We don't rely on the mail service. You know, there's all kinds of problems with finding mailboxes right now.
Yeah,
we heard about that lately. So we actually have our guys drive out and hand deliver and get a hand receipt and all that. I've never had, knock on wood, knock on my head here, never had one case ever not get filed timely. And we filed over 2,000 cases in Oregon and Washington in the last 10 years.
Right.
So, we spent a lot of effort and time getting your case filed. And December 31st, we have my one guy goes into Multnomah County. He's there pretty much most of the day getting stuff filed, because we're filing.
Right. And they see him coming in and they're like, oh.
Well, no, the clerks actually like him because they know what they're going to do in the next 3 or 4 hours.
Right.
Versus doing something every, you know, 10 minutes
or
so.
Right.
So, yeah. But, we do that. And then we negotiate on your behalf. Last year, Multnomah County, I'll give them credit for, maybe I've been around long enough, they finally figured it out, that we negotiated probably at least half of our cases before we had a hearing.
Sure.
So it makes sense, because here's what you're paying for. For us to get ready to appear for a 10-minute hearing, that's all we get in Multnomah County. Okay, yeah. We get 10 minutes to talk to the county. We spend about 4 hours of our time putting together our evidence.
Sure.
Right? And so for us to go in and do a 10-minute presentation is 4 hours of our time. The county also spend 4 hours of their time putting together their evidence, okay? So if we got a mutual agreement on values, why waste 8 hours' time of both of our parts doing that? Just come up with a number, sign off on it, we're done, okay? And I think the county finally got that last year. We did, like I said, about half our cases last year in Long County were we call stipulated, or STIPs we call them, stipulated out, and they were done before we had a hearing. So the board likes it because, you know, it's just read the number in, yes, and go. And it's and there's a case down, and they move on to something else. But we did a lot of those last year. We turn down more cases than we take.
Sure. Well, because you're not going to go try to argue a case that you don't think you can win.
Well, or it doesn't make sense.
Sure.
There's no savings at all. I've got a client right now. I just signed him up, and he's saving $300. He bought a house over North Portland. He's saving $300. I said, well, normally I wouldn't recommend this because your cost is $380 up front. $350 to us is $30 filing fee. And he says, yeah, but here's the other thing too, is in Oregon, if we get a signed decision by the board, it creates 5 years of what they call adjudicated value. So what that means is that the assessor going forward for the next 5 years has to market value that property off the lower market value that we just established in that hearing. So he's getting $300 savings the next 5 years. So he's getting over sure. $900. So it's roughly $1,800 horizon, if you will, of savings. He's paying $384. That makes sense to me, but I normally don't have clients jump in on something like that.
Right. Well, yes, and you're, like I said, what I heard from that is you're just very upfront about, hey, here's what we think we could save, right?
Yeah.
$300. And he goes, okay. You know, he said that may not make sense, but it made sense to him.
And here's a little secret for you, my business secret. I don't invoice for $100. It doesn't make sense. I lose money if I invoice for $100. So I normally don't do that. The first year I did this, we were taking everything and anything. And I don't forget, I got a check for $6.21 with this gal living on the river in Milwaukee, an older lady. And I just sent her the check, you know, and she says, where's your invoice? And I said, I can't afford to invoice you for $6.21. I'll lose. No, I pay all my bills. I want to know how much the invoice is.
Right.
And I said, just buy someone a Coke somewhere. Okay.
Right.
Buy someone a cup of coffee and then pay it forward, it forward, you know?
Yeah.
And she goes, no, I want an invoice. And I said, you're not getting one. I'm not sending you an invoice for $1.20. It costs me more than that to print it, you know?
Yeah. That's pretty funny. But yeah, so most of the time, I mean, when we're talking those, you know, the $1 million property, when you're talking significant savings, some of those you're cutting in half. I mean, that's several thousand dollars day one that the clients are saving, let alone, like you said, expound that out for the next 5 or 6 years.
We had a couple of cases this year where our clients got over $100,000. On residential properties. Now, we don't just do residential, by the way, okay?
Okay.
We're talking about that.
Yeah.
It's 81% of the accounts that are residential. We're doing right now, we're doing the new Jupiter Hotel.
Okay.
Okay. County and I have a value discussion on that. They're at 27.5. We're at 18.1 with an appraisal. So that's a significant, and it's a basis year. This is the year to sit and assess value. So it's very important for us to get this number right. We haven't got this decided yet. We're still negotiating, arm wrestling, if you will.
Yeah.
But I feel confident we'll get this thing worked out before we ever have a trial on it.
Well, that's awesome. So if you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I could save a couple thousand dollars on my property tax, I'd like to get that checked out. How do they get a hold of you? We talked about it last segment, but
you can call us at 503-869-4349 or email us at steve@1stcp.com.
Perfect. And you can always send me an email at askbo@pfgwm.com or give us a call, 503-253-3000. We're happy to send Steve's contact information your way. You can also give us a call if you have questions about your finances, about your investments, about your taxes, or your estate planning. We'll be back with more Investing Simplified after this.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group. Your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now tuning in, thanks for joining us. As promised, joining us is Steve Anderson from First Class Property Tax Appeals. I've been telling you about he was coming on for the last couple of weeks. We had a lot of feedback last year, Steve, when you came on, and a lot of people are really concerned as we get to property tax time coming up. We're going to be filing here soon or paying our property taxes, right? They're all due. So I imagine it's a pretty busy time for you. So thanks for joining us.
All of a sudden I'm real popular. Yeah.
Getting a lot of, well, I know that I have sent, you know, several clients your way, and people are, you know, we were just talking in the break about some of the wins that you've had by, you know, I'd say defeating the county, but you know, when people are paying too much in property tax, they may not know it.
Well, thanks for the referrals, by the way. Yeah, and we did have a case out in Yamhill County you referred to me. So, We don't win every case. We don't guarantee results. We tend to look at every case we can and come up back with a recommendation. And a lot of times our information going back to the client, our potential client, is don't do this, you know. So, but a lot of situations it makes sense, and we try to give them a ballpark what the savings would be, and then make a decision based off that information.
So if, you know, is there a good rule of thumb, you know, where people are saying, is it just, hey, I don't want to pay so much in property tax? There's more to it than just I'm paying too much in property tax, right?
I think people want to pay taxes. I mean, it's a you know, standard part of our government and our well-being and all that. But I think they want to pay their fair share of taxes. That's what it boils down to. And then they want to make sure they're paying their fair share. And property taxes in Oregon are quite substantial.
Yeah.
And so if you're off by 10%, it could be a lot of money. So they want us to take a look at it. Kind of like a checkup at the doctor. How am I doing? Okay, kind of situation. We look at it and say, here's what we're thinking based upon either, you know, your appraisal on your property, your purchase of your property, or comparable sales in your neighborhood. They're either off or it's close or whatever.
Yeah, okay. And is there a way, you know, if I'm looking at my property tax, is there, you know, any sort of events that happen where, you know, people should be looking out for? So, hey, I just bought the house. Is that a time to look at it, or,
actually, the real market value in Oregon, there's two values on the statement, and real market value and assessed value. Real market value is assigned to what a willing buyer, willing seller would pay for the property or sell the property for. And a bona fide sale is a real strong, the number one, in my opinion, one strong indicator of the value of the property. And there are a couple of exceptions to that. If you buy a bank influenced sale, like a foreclosure short sale, that's probably not going to fly. If you buy it from your uncle or your aunt or your sister, that's probably not going to fly either. But if it's a situation where you're going through a multiple listing service and you're using a realtor, you know, possibly, and you're buying a property that way, and the property sale price is significantly lower than the real market value assigned by the county, we need to talk.
Okay. So, yeah, if I'm looking at that, do I see the real market value on my, is it on my tax statement?
On the statement itself, there's two values. The real market value is the larger number, typically the two, and then assessed value is the lower number of the two. And people think that the value that they paid for the property is not lower than the assessed value. They have no basis for an appeal. That's not true. Because of compression, which I can't explain to you on the radio here, but through Measure 5, compression was made available to us. Compression, especially in Multnomah County, is very rampant. And that's where we do most of our business at.
Okay, so you know, if their real market value is not below, you're saying if it's not below, if it's maybe below what they sold it for or what they bought it for, you know, that's a good way to look for it.
Yeah. And okay. One of the problems we have in Oregon, I'm kind of joking about this. I have an ex-client, a year ago I worked with him. He was a retired tax attorney from Illinois.
Okay.
Now, Illinois has a lot of problems tax-wise, okay? And he bought a house in the Hollywood District of Portland. He hired me to look at his situation, and we appealed, and we won some money for him. And he told me, he said, who writes your statutes and stuff in Oregon? He says, your property tax situation is so opaque. And I said, yeah, I think it's pretty much written by the assessor's office. And if you think about it, Oregon's tax year runs from July 1st to June 30th. You're getting your bill right now in October. So you get your bill like halfway through the tax year itself. But the value they assigned to that property is from 1st of January this year. So it's like 10 months old when you get it. So when you call me and say, or email me and say, I just got my tax bill and the value's off. You're right. It is. It's 10 months off. Okay. Either the market's gone up or gone down your neighborhood. And that's reflected in what we're talking about here. So the most important thing about that, though, those dates, is that when you appeal, you have to appeal with information, facts based upon the assessed date of the 1st of January. Not when you got the bill, not when you paid the bill.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And especially in a year like this year, when, you know, we may see crazy fluctuations because of things outside of our control, like COVID. Okay. And then we were talking, you mentioned kind of because, you know, there's a thinner market for any sort of properties or homes that are above, you know, $1 million or sort of that range. That's a good place to kind of look to, just because of, hey, that's a niche that maybe isn't as, you know, changing hands as much, like it may be a $400,000 or $500,000 property.
Right. A $400,000 property has 15-20 offers on it right now in this market we're in. I'm a real estate broker also.
Okay.
When you get above $1 million, actually about $800,000 anymore, depending on what market you're in, what part of the city you're in, there's very little activity, very little buyer activity. When you get above $1 million, I've had assessors tell me, we're just throwing knives in the air, hoping we stick the right price. We don't know, because the market is so volatile. There's so few buyers that, you think about it, you've got a couple things going on here. One is that the my generation, the goal was to always buy bigger, buy more, whatever. Yeah. Well, we're at the point now where we're downsizing and we're going to single level homes. We're going to, you know, other places, if you will.
Sure.
And so the market, the buyer's market, the buyer demand for that product is not as great as it was. And a lot of times in that situation, if there is a buyer that can afford that property, they're going to probably build their own anyway. They don't want to buy somebody else's dream.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, would it be fair to say, hey, basically, you know, it's worth a conversation if your property or your home and property together are over $1 million in the area here just to see, right?
If it's over $1 million, I think you need to at least have us take a look at it. Cause yeah, we're seeing a lot of activity there that shows that they're off, the county's off on values.
Well, and it can be a significant difference, right? I mean, you were mentioning that, you know, the Yamhill County property we were just talking about, I mean, they got a significant savings, right?
Right. It's almost $4,000.
That's no chump change.
Right? No. And the situation there was that was based on a sale. They bought the property, but it was a property they bought 3 years ago. And kind of interesting story, a little side story to that. When we went out there and did inspection with the county assessor staff person, one of the problems they had on the property was the county had assumed, based on permit activity, that the detached garage was a converted ADU, and such dwelling, and it wasn't finished. In fact, it was just sheetrocked. So there's like $100,000 right there in value differential. They had a detached gazebo and hot tub that the county thought was worth $40,000. It was basically in disrepair. Okay, it was worth pretty much nothing.
Right.
They had a shop on the property, the county did, and it ended up being just a single car garage and no electricity to it whatsoever. So you start taking these little factors out of there, and then the value starts dropping. And then the fact that they bought the property, and it was on the market for like 9 months. It wasn't something that was just, you know, 2-day sale. It had a lot of market exposure, and they kept dropping the price till they found a buyer. That's what happens in real estate. You know, it's a market. And the market said that it's worth X, and the county had valued at Y.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense. So if they, you know, folks are listening and they recently bought, you know, their property, you know, the thing I heard from you, and I learned this today, I didn't know that assessed value or the county value that they have, if the person you bought the property from had applied for permitting to build out and they had plans, right? Because a lot of people have plans to go, okay, we're going to convert that garage into another dwelling unit. We want a mother-in-law suite. We're going to do all these things. They applied for those permits, got those permits, but the work never got finished. But the county doesn't come out and see that the work got finished, right?
No, well, the county doesn't issue permits. The city issued permits.
Right.
So they just assume, and they always assume at the higher number. Another thing in Multnomah County, for instance, okay, if you pull two permits on your property, like you're going to do a kitchen remodel and maybe do electrical permit, okay?
Yeah.
Electrical and plumbing permit. They automatically assume you did a full house remodel. Assume that, okay? So they're saying, well, you pulled two permits, therefore we think you did the whole house redone. You might have updated your kitchen. You might have, you know, maybe
a bathroom.
Yeah. And I get that phone call a lot where all we did was like $20,000 in improvements, and they've got a $300,000 jump in my value of my property, and I got $3,000 jump in my taxes, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Okay, so if someone's doing a remodel, then that would be, you know, another time. We talked about like times if you're over $1 million, it would be make sense to give your office a call or just at least check. But if you're doing a remodel and spending $30,000-$40,000, which is, you know, not chump change either, but if they're getting a value increase of 10 times that, it's significant.
Anytime the assessed value goes up 3% per year in Oregon, period. Anytime you have an event that jumps to more than 3%, okay, which would be a remodel or new construction, that's what they call a basis year. That assessed value gets changed by more than 3%. The only way to challenge that value is that year. After the assessed value is changed, I can't go back a year later and try to claw that back. I can challenge real market value every year for anybody. But as far as assessed value goes, and that's your multiplier. You want to consider that. I would say it's very, very important that you take a strong look at that number and make sure it's right. If it's not right or you don't think it's right, give us a call or email us. We'll take a look at it for you.
Sure. And, you know, kind of rule of thumb, if you had mentioned the assessed value, once that's set, it's kind of hard to challenge it, right? So does that assessed value get redone when you buy or sell a home, or that's the one that only gets redone when you do remodel or permitting or update?
When the house is, when the building is built, okay, that's when they assign an assessed value to it. Any improvements or changes are added to that number plus 3% per year is what it is.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. So, okay. So if there's any sort of big improvements happening, if you've had, you know, permits pulled if you're doing a remodel, that's a time to make sure that that assessed value is right, or if you're building a new property.
Right.
What about the difference, and this may be a dumb question, but I know enough to be dangerous about that. What about the land value? Is that something that, you know, gets taken into effect on all that stuff, or is that just a real market value deal?
The land value is a tough one because there aren't a lot of lots changing hands, and the counties know that. So if you look at, I gave you some decisions they look at. If you look at every single one of them, all the valuation judgments, all the valuations deductions were done on the building side, none on the land side whatsoever.
Okay.
The counties hold land as sacred. They don't want to ever lower the value. Now, I fought them on a few. We've got a few where we've got, we had one in Oregon City a couple of years ago. She had like 9 acres of property, and they had it valued at $600,000 or $700,000 in value. Well, 90% of her 9 acres was basically wetlands.
Oh, sure.
And I had to go to a bunch of different, you know, hoops to get information from different other entities, by the way, in the county, to come back to the assessor's office and go, look, according to your county, she can't build, she can't plant, she can't, you know.
Right.
And you got her valued as if it's like 4 building sites. You can't do that. And the county is, okay, you're right. But that took a lot of work to get that done.
Right, and that's a specific situation. That's not, hey, we thought our land was overvalued, and hey, this was overvalued because it's not necessarily usable. So if you're looking at a usable lot, they were valuing it as if, like you said, she could have built 4 units.
And the problem from my standpoint and the taxpayer standpoint is, in order to fight the county on a land value, I have to go find 5 or 6 different sale comparables. They aren't out there.
Right.
They don't exist.
Yeah, because they're not just selling. Loss of land isn't changing hands.
Well, and if they do, like if you buy a new house, Here's the problem I have. If you buy a new house, you go to a subdivision, D.R. Horton's, pick a builder.
Sure.
And you walk in and say, I want to buy that $500,000 property there, okay? It's got a plan 2240 on it, whatever it is. When you get the sale done, okay, there's no breakout between the building and the land
on the
whole information. So the county assumes a value in the land.
Right.
Right? The builder bought the land for a certain price, but it's never disclosed. And they've got a certain price built into that lot, but they never disclose that either, okay? So the builders are kind of hurting us in that regard. But then again, I understand from a business standpoint, they don't want to tell people what the land costs.
Right.
I get that. But from an appeal standpoint, we have a little basis to work with as far as numbers go.
Sure.
And the counties know that.
Right. So, I mean, you're kind of in a no-win situation. So generally speaking, the land is in, like I said, I didn't know. That's just a question I just learned now.
I get land calls every year. I need, the land's wrong. I said, find me 6 comps and I'll fight it for you. Yeah. I mean, it's serious. That's what it is.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Well, we're going to take a break here, but I know we want to come back and maybe talk through some examples of times that you've saved clients money. But just before we go into that, can you hit people with your contact information if they have questions about their property taxes?
The office number is 503-869-4349. And you can email me at steve@1stcp.com.
Perfect. And if you need that number again, give us a call. We'll do it again here after the next break. But you can always call our office at 503-253-3000. We'd be happy to shoot Steve's contact information over to you. So with that, we're going to take a break. We will be back with more Investing Simplified, talking about property taxes. It's top of mind. Hey, how can we get those lowered if we can? This is Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thanks for tuning in. As a reminder, you can get a replay of our show played on our website, pfgwm.com, at investingsimplifiedradio.com, or anywhere you get your podcast, whether that's Apple Music, iTunes, Google Play, and the like. And I'm here with Steve Anderson of First Class Property Tax Appeals. I keep practicing that so I can say it comes off the tongue. But we've been talking about appealing your property tax. It's very much top of mind for folks as we're listening. And Steve, we were talking in the break, about basically the effects that, you know, we've all been dealing with. It no longer looks like Mordor outside, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. But there are still, you know, fire issues, especially in Clackamas County, that have happened. And do you have a lot of folks that are calling and asking about, you know, what to do now that, you know, we had this fire damage? Or
I've actually had conversations with people in Lincoln County, Marion County, and Clackamas County. And there is a form you fill out. And Oregon's kind of interesting in that Washington's really proactive on this. Oregon's not. Oregon's reactive. It's kind of a negative, in my opinion. There's a form you fill out. You go to Department of Revenue and get it off their form chart, so to speak. You have till either June 30th, which is the end of the tax year, or 60 days after the event, whichever's later, to file, okay, for a fire damage. And I've talked to some of my counterparts in Clackamas County, Assessor's Office. One of the issues going on right now is that if the building or buildings are demolished, gone 100%, that's easy. What was real market value signed the property? Boom, it's gone, okay?
Sure.
It's when you have a partial burn that you have a problem. Now it's an argument of, okay, how much is burned? What's the value of it, et cetera? And what the counties typically do, and I fall back on this too, is like wait for the insurance adjuster to come out, and if there's insurance on the property, and give us a valuation. The problem is, if you talk to any of the insurance companies right now, the big insurance companies, they don't have anybody here because they're all down in California. There's still fires burning in California.
Yeah.
So they might be months before they get a valuation on these properties around here. Meanwhile, people sitting around here with nothing. They don't have a car to drive. They don't have a computer to go on to. You know, they have to go to the library and walk the library probably to get there to access a computer to even find out what's going on. So, excuse me. So when you're dealing with this situation, if you have a full burn, a total burn, that's a lot easier to work with as far as the paperwork goes and all that. If it's a partial burn, you have to wait for a valuation. That's the hard part.
Okay, so if people are thinking about, hey, we've got partially, wait for the, you'd say the rule of thumb, kind of the best bet is to wait for the insurance adjuster to come out and do.
I would file the paperwork anyway, and without a value on there, and then have the county come back to you and say, what's going on? That's incomplete. Well, it's incomplete. I'm waiting for a value from the insurance. They understand that.
Yeah.
But at least get your toe in the water, so to speak, as far as getting a position filed. I will say this: the counties I've talked to so far are very, very workable on this. Okay, they know there's a problem here. In fact, Clackamas County made a priority of it. So, but by the same token, I mean, I was at a meeting the other day in Lincoln County where one of the assessor staff people was telling me, yeah, just file this. And the guy looks at me and goes, I haven't got a car, I haven't got a computer, I haven't got a house. Okay, so how am I going to file? I haven't got a pen or paper, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, you know, so they understand that they're working with people. So,
okay. So, you know, you get into this fire damage, then number one step, make sure you file the paperwork. Get that started.
Right.
Wait for the value. That makes a lot of sense.
We've had, as a hearings officer, former hearings officer, we had a gal come in one time from Malala, 85-year-old woman. I was so mad. I mean, as a hearings officer, I want to see and just think about this. With her son, who's about my age, walks in the door, and her husband passed away in April. Her house burned down in August.
Ugh.
Her husband was the one who wrote all the checks, knew everything about all the finances and all that. She didn't know she had to file a paperwork with the county for her house. She got a $4,000 tax bill, property tax bill, on a cement slab. Okay, that's what she's paying. And she's in there, and she's like, you know, obviously in shock. No husband, no house, okay? And then the assessor's going, we didn't file the paperwork, and we're sorry. Wait a minute, you know, come on. You know, more compassion than that. So actually what happened was one of the board members, myself, we actually filled out the paperwork for her at the hearing, made the assessor staff person just go ballistic,
right,
which I love, by the way. and we got her filed, okay, and got it taken care of. But now, after that happened, Department of Revenue put in a rule and we couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, okay.
They took the tool away from us. So I don't think they mean that, you know, to be mean about it. It's just that the situation is people don't know. They don't understand.
Yeah.
I had a client, showing the difference here. I had a client in Vancouver, had a house fire, had a kitchen fire in her house. She said when the fire truck showed up, the fire guy gave her the form. A couple of days later, Red Cross came by to see how she was doing. They gave her the form, and then she filed a claim with her insurance company. Her insurance broker emailed. So within 1 week, she had three forms mailed to her in Washington about how to file. In Oregon, you got to go file. Go find it somewhere. Okay?
Yeah. You got to go do the file. File what? How to file? So that's pretty tough. So you know, if you've been affected by the fires in any way, where the land is burning or you had partial burn, like you said, it's real easy if the whole thing's gone. But make sure you're filing that paperwork with the Department of Revenue. You said
it's with the county. Actually.
With the county, okay.
Yeah. But the DOR is where you find it though. The form's on DOR's website.
Okay.
All right. So
okay, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, then that way they're kind of talking about that. And you were mentioning something also in, you know, when we were talking in the break about there's, you know, some, you know, goings on with some property tax changes. Oh. I mean, just to end the show today, I feel like on a, you know, on a fun note, right?
Well, here's a couple of things to think about. Just nuggets for thought here, okay? The politicians that I, as I understand it, look for different ways to create revenue streams or enhance revenue streams. I understand that. I just want to pass this on to you. The city of Nashville, which is not in Oregon, it's in Tennessee, okay? They just passed an emergency 34% tax increase for COVID on property taxes in the city of Nashville. All right. So, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen here, but I would be, you know, concerned about that. Secondly, State Senator Jenny Burdick, who is head of Ways and Means, which is the check writing people, the Senate, that's one of the biggest power positions you can have, stepped down from that position to head up a committee on property taxes. Okay. And before COVID hit, her comment was that the government is underfed and needs more revenue, and they need to look at the property tax stream in Oregon to enhance that. And now that she's doing that, I mean, obviously they're looking for different ways to increase that revenue stream. So I'm concerned about the fact of what they're going to do or not do. And I've seen in my 10 years of doing this, it's essentially there's not a lot of people in Salem representing a taxpayer.
Sure.
It's just more revenue for the programs down there and all that. And so I just want to kind of bring your attention to that.
Not to scare you or anything.
No,
but yeah.
no boogeyman, Halloween boogeyman here, you know. But, you know, yeah. I'm concerned about those two issues because I kind of keep my finger on the pulse, that kind of stuff. And I know when I see something happening, a new tax somewhere else, I know that people are looking at it, that it may be used in Oregon somehow somewhere.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, if they can. You know, I had a client that used to call Oregon the People's Republic of Oregon. That was his terminology, not my terminology. But, you know, because those tax rates can be pretty high, and particularly in Multnomah County, right? That's you hear that sort of phrase over and over again. Is living in Multnomah County, your property tax is significantly higher than outside of it. But, you know, is that something you've seen in your practice too, or is that just anecdotal?
Multnomah County's millage rate is about 50% higher than Clackamas County's, and it's about 35% higher than Washington County's. Multnomah County voters are voting on a third school bond. You haven't retired the other two yet. You're paying for the first two already. And the Metro bond coming through here. And so right now, I'm seeing like $26 per thousand is the millage rate in Multnomah County in most properties. If the bonds go through that are on the ballot right now, it'd be more like $27.50, which is basically 2.75% of your value of property is being paid in taxes every year. Measure 5 came about when people are paying 3% of their property value and property taxes every year. So we're getting close to that threshold, so to speak. And my biggest concern is that I talk to a lot of seniors.
Sure.
And they're on fixed incomes.
Yeah.
Was it 1.2% increase in Social Security?
Did they even go that high? I know that Social Security was going to be the lowest cost of living increase that we're going to have.
Yeah. Well, 2 years ago, they had none.
Yeah, yeah.
So 1.2% increase in Social Security, and along comes the property taxes, and they're going up, you know, 8, 10, 12% per year. And when I talk to seniors, that's the number one thing in their budget. It's higher than Medicaid, higher than their medical bills, higher than their transportation, higher than their utilities, is their property taxes.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they own the house free and clear, own the building free and clear.
Right.
But they're getting taxed out of their homes. And I'm concerned about that. And we were talking earlier off the air. Washington has an age thing. If you're making less than $40,000 a year and you're above a certain age, they'll reduce or remove your property taxes. Oregon doesn't have that.
Oh, okay. So, yeah tell me a little bit more about that. So, you're got to be below. Do you know the numbers?
It's $40,000 household income is what it is.
Okay.
And
is that provisional income or is that just total income?
Total income.
Okay.
And they've got a 35, a 65, and 100% program over there, depending upon what your income is and how many people in the household is what it is.
Oh, okay.
So I have a client over there who missed it by $140 one year. He's like, I made $140 too much. And I go, what do you do there? But no, Oregon doesn't have that. So I wish they did. I wish there was some provision because I really have I'm getting close to being a senior myself, but I'm really concerned about the fact that seniors are being taxed out of their houses. I get that phone call. And a lot of times what happens is you have a surviving widow, and they've lived on two Social Security incomes and then everything's been fine. I mean, they weren't eating, you know, steak every night, but they're doing okay. And then he passes and or goes into a retirement, you know, some kind of facility, whatever, and that eats up a lot of money, or he's gone, and now you got a situation where she's living on half the money,
right?
And trying to make things fit, and say, I can't, they just can't, and so they do the Oregon has the ability to go ahead and you can freeze your, you know, property tax, they'll pay them for you. But that also draws interest on
the right. Yeah. So yeah, they're paying it for you, but they're not taking care of it. They're just paying it for you,
right?
And
well, deferring the
they're loaning you the money.
At a pretty high rate, by the way.
Yeah, that's not something that I think most people would be particularly interested in if they can help it. Right.
As an investment guy, you wouldn't recommend it, right?
No. I would not recommend taking out a high interest loan. Yeah, no. Well, that's a big concern that a lot of people have. And so, if you're thinking about looking at that, and you want to make sure, hey, let's have somebody take a second look. Like Steve said, their team will take a look. It's a complimentary look to tell you what they think. This is what their recommendations are. You mentioned, just to kind of reiterate this, because this is what I heard you say. And then basically, if you think it's a go, you say, yeah, we think we should do this. Do you guys want to engage us? And then I, as a client, say, yep, I want to do that. $350 for the paperwork filing and all that. And then the county may have a $30. If you're in Multnomah.
Right.
Right. But then my hands are off, and I'm letting you guys go to the races and go to bat for us. Right. So
I want to qualify free, though, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Free is a single family dwelling or a single commercial building, okay? I've got people sending in Washington Square 52 attached leases, you know, or 28 unit apartment complex. We're not doing that for free because there's a lot of time involved and all that.
Yeah.
We have to be real about this whole situation.
That's fair. That's a fair point. Yeah. So if you're, with a caveat, right? We're not taking advantage. There's no free lunch, right?
Right.
So if you'd like to get a hold of Steve, you can give their office a call. Man, I can't speak this morning. So you can give your office a call. How do they get a hold of you?
503-869-4349 is our cell. And then the office email is steve@1stcp.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for listening today, y'all. Thanks for tuning in. If you have further questions, if you got questions that you'd like to get answered, send them in to askbo@pfgwm.com or leave a comment at investingsimplifiedradio.com. Really appreciate you tuning in today. Stay safe out there. Be kind to each other. God bless you all. We'll talk to you soon.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.